Notice! Notice! This midweek mini was recorded several months ago and may not be up to date with current events. For fresh minisode uploads with every episode, head to patreon.com/chilluminatipod.
Here on the minisodes.
Oh yeah, we went to the dawn of anal probing today.
We did. We saw over the hill of the anal probe.
Yeah. Finally, the era we've been waiting for is here.
Welcome to the show, gentlemen. I'm excited. I got something for today. I'm sure you know. Well, no. What do you got, Alex? I'm curious.
I have a listener story from our fine Reddit that I thought was kind of a fun one. This person put in a lot of effort. Put in like a lot of stories. I'm just going to read the first one in the intro.
Okay.
But please continue. I really like that people have started picking up the pace at which they submit listener stories to the subreddit. So if there's some way that I can convince you to get in there and submit one, I'm trying to read them more often so you guys have more of an incentive. So you get a little bit of extra spice in between, you know,
it's all about that. It's all about the extra spice.
You got to spice it up. You want to, you know, get a little death stick in there. You know what I'm saying? Like Elon Sleazabagano, one of my favorite Star Wars characters. Anyway, this is from Minute Rooster. And they say, listener stories. There's a few here. I'm just going to read the first one, though. But they say, hello, everyone. I've been listening to the Chilluminati podcast for less time than I probably should have, considering how long I've watched content from Jesse. After wanting to attend the 2024 live show and attending the latest live show, November 2025, listening to all of the viewer stories episodes and my most recent stories topic, I have decided to share all of my stories here on the subreddit.
Okay.
This is my first ever posting on Reddit, so apologies for any faux pas or the length of this post. Well, you've covered all the apologies that first-time posts have on them, so far, so good. This will be written in reverse chronological order. I give full permission to read them off on the podcast and feel free to cherry pick any of the stories if only one strikes your fancy. I'm only doing it because I only have as long as I have to talk and there's a lot of stories here. Anyway, they go on. I believe I'm more of an Alex leaning Mathis. I like a good story and can believe in things that have some facts with missing unexplainable details that contradict typical scientific explanations. Now, to preface the stories, I should give context to my house. I live in southeast Wisconsin. My house was built sometime between 1880 and 1910 and has been remodeled several times by previous owners and parents. My grandparents have lived next door my entire life and have the same setup. Both houses are settings for several stories. Also, I've never done drugs. I've been offered weed once in high school, and I've only gotten tipsy once after drinking about 18 to 24 ounces of Crystal Skull vodka. So all of these stories are me uninebriated. That is a lot of vodka. That's a lot of vodka. And I wouldn't call that tipsy. I feel like if you drank that much vodka, you'd be tipped schlorped. Over. Yeah. You'd be straight up
schlorped.
Schlorpity dorpity. Now for the stories, and this one's called For Whom the Bell Tolls, It Tolls for Me. I know, I'm ringing it.
What?
It's a big title, but it has a lot of information also. The ending of last year was really rough on my family as my grandmother had to go into the hospital on her birthday right before Christmas. She had cancer and her condition had been getting worse over the past few years. Her hospital stay continued through the holidays to New Year's Day. The doctors had run out of potential treatments, and she could either stay in the hospital receiving injections and see if they could find another treatment to try or go home for some at-home hospice care, and she chose to go home. I apologize for the depressing introduction, but it is while she is at home in hospice care that this story takes place. After a week where she was lucid, she had now become bedridden and could not get out of bed. My mother, grandpa, and two cousins heard the doorbell ring. Thinking it might have been a nurse visiting to do a check on my grandma, they checked the front door. No one was there. Back door? No one there either. Confused, everyone sat back down in the den, the room adjacent to where grandma was in bed. There is no door. It's a 7 to 8 foot wide doorway to the room. A short time later, the doorbell rings again and again. No one was at the door. Later still, it rings again. At this point, the confusion being palpable, it was uttered out loud. Who's ringing the doorbell? Great question. At this point, my grandmother in the other room lifts up her good arm, proclaims, "I am," and pushes forward her index finger, to which the doorbell rings. Shortly what? After this, she said, "I am." Ding dong. Yeah. Shortly after this, I went next door and watched my mom taking a shot of Crown Royale and was informed of what had happened. While I was over, I too experienced the doorbell ringing with no one present. We explored the potential causes. The doorbell being stuck, it wasn't. A wire short. My and my father are technicians and know how to test for that. The wire was not shorting either. Though there was a quiet humming coming from the bell portion of the doorbell, there couldn't be someone else having a Bluetooth or wireless doorbell interference. The doorbell is hardwired. Could it just be that it's old wiring? The entire time we have lived in these two houses, this has never happened before, though we have experienced something else messing with electronics in the den. More on that later. The doorbell continued periodically ringing through the next day, and I managed to record one of the rings, but that evidence is moot because someone could have easily moved out of the way of the camera. I personally know no one was doing that, but that means nothing to skeptics. Later, during the second day of doorbell chimes, I was sitting with my grandmother holding her good hand, and three times she flexed her index finger and the doorbell went off. My mother and cousin in the other room were looking at me with a wild expression. And I'm not saying it was just fidgeting. It was a deliberate flex of just the index finger. And after she fully extended it, that was when the doorbell rang. After the second day of doorbell ringing, and it rang throughout the night, the ringing stopped. The doorbell was still humming with its quiet buzz. It did not ring for the rest of my grandma's time in hospice care and has not since. Now, my grandmother was proudly spiritual, not religious. She loved exploring other cultures and religions and very much enjoyed any references I made to topics from the Chilluminati podcast.
Hell yes.
She would say when she got the sudden urge to make brownies or other baked goods that it was her guardian angel, her grandmother, visiting. And over the past few years, a little LED tree that she kept on the table in the den would turn on and off at random intervals, to which she said her son was visiting. Given her spiritual inclinations, we assumed it was her setting the doorbell off, and would have even if she had not said anything at all. While we were sitting next to her and holding her hand, we asked her to ring the doorbell if she ever came to visit us again. I didn't receive a verbal response from her before she passed about sharing the story, but she would have been more than fine with sharing it. And it has given my family a good way, a good story to share and help us with our grieving process.
Hmm.
So there you go. The grandma that could ring a bell remotely.
Hell yeah.
With psychic powers. I never heard a story like that before. Thought it was worth sharing.
Yeah, great story.
So thank you for writing in. Thank you for making your first Reddit post. And yeah, you done it. You're in there. Your soul has been corrupted for life now.
Jess, I've got two things I want to talk about. So Jesse, what do you
have? Two things. All right. Well, so I want to bring up a Big Think article that was pretty neat in a terrifying way. So Sven Nyholm, who is the professor of ethics of artificial intelligence at Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich, is one of the first people to study the ethics of AI.
Mm.
And so, you know, he noticed some things that were a little worrying. And I think this is probably one of those topics that, at least for me, I'm like, okay, this is reconfirms my biases. But I'm sure for many people, you will agree as well. So he says, AI is designed to make people not think. He noticed that many people, especially in his classes, can't be bothered to engage with demanding texts when AI summaries are just seconds away. Why study philosophy at a university if you don't want to think, he asks. If you don't want to sharpen your critical abilities and instead outsource them to a mindless AI program, why are you even doing this?
If you're already doing the philosophy major, that's like the one that everybody already makes fun of for being like absolutely a useless major, right? Which I don't think it is, right? I think it's a fine major, right? I took a bunch of philosophy classes. I think it's an interesting thing to study, but just just a field with that reputation, and yeah. then you're going to not even read the fucking books. You're going to read AI.
I would even argue being in the age of early AI makes philosophical classes more valuable.
Right.
Yeah. He's like, it's in these moments, both my students' studies and my role as a teacher feel less meaningful. And so he started thinking about like the definition of meaning in the future of our society. And, you know, like I said, as one of the earliest philosophers to examine how AI intersects with this and now the meaning of human life, he looks closely at language and, you know, big tech companies are using about their AI goals. Like when OpenAI or DeepMind say that they aim to ensure their AI products benefit, transform, and improve people's lives, what vision of that good is being assumed? Like, are they asking in return for all of that?
Yeah, are we healthy, activated people who live in a money-free society because we don't have jobs anymore because that's an archaic way of thinking and society's been solved and hunger and medicine are free? Is that what you're talking about?
That's what he's asking. He says he worries that as more and more information and power becomes like at the touch of our fingers, it's going to cost our mental development, that eventually life will just be less meaning for us because as we use less and less of ourselves to create things, we lose less and less of who we are. He's like, it's extremely like the Matrix when they're like, when we started doing all the thinking for you, it became our world, right? That yep. vibe of like, or will we just lose ourselves? And he wrote, think of a novelist leaning heavily on a ghostwriter or a political leader delivering a stirring speech written entirely by staff. Now replace the ghostwriter or the speechwriter with AI. At that point, he suggests, you might have to say that no one really deserves credit. We right. admire AI as an engineering achievement, he explains, yet we do not treat it as an accomplishment in a human sense. Effort, skill, and authorship remain categories we reserve for people, not for technologies. Many philosophers connect meaning to achievement, and if we aren't achieving anything, we no longer have meaning. And if it goes back to that Matrix things, like at a certain point, if the robots do all the work, then it's their stuff, not ours.
What are they? What are they called in the time machine? The two, there's Morlocks? Like the two, there's the Morlocks, which are like the savage, like the, not savages, yeah. but the predators.
Right.
And then there's the Aloy.
Oh, I don't remember what the people that are the feed. The
one
food.
Are like, they're like beautiful little babies that are human size, like adult sized. And they're like, yeah, the livestock for the other yes. ones.
Yeah.
That's what we're making. Like, I think there's going to be people who don't do tech, and there's going to be people that do tech. I think it's going to be the first time you can opt into evolution. Like, it's like, it's going to be a wedge in our species, I think. Like, it's fucking weird, man. Like, I don't like it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand, like, how it's going to, everybody's going to adopt. I guess we're all going to get dumber over hundreds of years, right? Like, I don't know.
I mean, that's the big worry is as, you know, you see videos online about, you know, teachers freaking out about their students not being able to read. That's always been a problem. Like, it's always been a problem. Even when I taught, students would be moved ahead and they're reading at a third grade level in like 11th grade. And you're like, how the hell did this happen? And that's just because the school systems were terrible. But now you can hide it by using AI summaries and using things like to not write reports for essay. You.
Yeah.
And you can get further without teachers recognizing there's a problem here. And yeah. suddenly you're in college and you have no discernible skills, and your college professors, who are not going to play by the same rules as high school professors, are going to be like, you need to leave this class. What are you doing here?
Yeah. I see like famous people on podcasts and stuff admitting that they can't read books. Like, they don't read them because they're like, they don't need to. They just get it summarized.
I read so much every day. Never mind books. I'm just, even if I'm online, I'm usually reading something. Like,
but that's why I'm saying, like, I just feel like, there's like at least two different brain shapes that are coming out of this. And I feel like some of us are at one with the data and some of us don't want to be. Some of us just want to be.
But it's the ones like the ones who users. Are at one with the data, who do the work and the research, are being the ones who understand how to use AI the most, rather than the right. ones who are not and are end up using AI and becomes a crutch for them as opposed to a tool.
Sure. Yeah, their jobs are actually becoming easier too. Like the people that like program and like understand the tech and like yeah, understand science.
The most recent update to, I think it was Claude's coding, has programmers freaking out because it's like, it's going to eliminate basically all these base level coding jobs because it can just do it without issues anymore.
Right. Which is, you know,
and that like, I agree.
You reap what you sow.
The AI bubble is going to pop. Like everything. I'm looking at people who went to CES this year and like your refrigerator has AI in it. Your glasses have like well, that shit.
Hold
is
on though.
Go.
Hold on. Hold on. I also watched people who went to CES this year. And for the first time ever, the number of sex related products outnumbered everything else.
That does not surprise me.
And they're all the like weird AI right based sex stuff. And I genuinely, AI look, we talked about this before. That's what the future, like there is a market. I'm convinced the workflow of people trying to separate, you know, men and women or trying to separate society. They get something out of the idea of, you know, those podcasts are like, dudes, like women suck. Oh, yeah. Get an AI girl, like so much easier than there is a lot here happening culturally that like is dangerous.
Oh, for sure. No. Yeah. What I mean by the AI bubble is going to pop. We're not going to see it in everything like it is right now, but there will be areas it isn't going to ever go away from and is here forever.
Well, like, what happens to those guys? Here. What happens to those guys when you don't need a real woman to suck your dick every day? So you don't have to be misogynistic.
Hopefully they never leave the house.
That's what I'm saying. Like, is that just where that movement ends? Like
that's where the evolution of our species happens. They get
when we get to the self fucking incels, is that the singularity?
I guess.
Of like internet trolls, do they just go away after that?
I don't know, man. I don't know, but I feel like there's it's weird that a lot of like the you know Silicon Valley bros who are very like women are also the Silicon Valley bros who are like, yes, this robot will fuck you.
Yes.
And you're like, this isn't healthy.
It's like a fucked up version of BioShock by like a BioShock guy whose whole dream was just like a woman you could have sex with who doesn't look you in the eye. You're like,
But I think deep down, I think deep down what it is it's not like there's something about the concept of I don't want to get to know a woman or another person as a person. They are here to be used. And if you don't want that, then I'm going to get a robot to do it.
Is a man not entitled to the salt of his cum?
But that's why, like, when these people have all this money, they're still, God damn it, these people are still not happy at the end of the day because they have no relationships with actual people. They're miserable.
But this goes back to the idea of, like, then the money can buy you a relationship.
And it never does.
But the computer will love you no matter what.
I guess.
And you can be a piece of shit to that thing.
But there's always going to be the understanding that that thing is not an actual person, right?
It's just letting people grow up to be complete assholes.
It's like a smash room. It's like a smash room for sex.
Yeah. It sucks, dude.
Most people, I think, over time, if they start out as an asshole, someone beats the shit out of them for it.
Right.
Or they learn a hard lesson, and they're like, oh, man, being a piece of shit isn't the way to go. I guess I should moderate everything about myself and be a normal person. And, like, that's how society for a while worked. And now it's like, no, F that noise. I want to be as crass and awful as I want because I don't need you. I have my online girlfriend, Kimmy Chu. She loves me.
Great. I can jizz whenever I want.
I don't need
The only thing that's good about women is replaced. I can jizz whenever I want.
It's but like it's also going to kill relationships with men.
Yeah, most of, such a like, self-owning right now, opinion.
Yeah, right now the biggest problem men face is that they won't even talk to each other.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Men don't form friends anymore. It's like, what do you mean? And that isn't just like one of those like punching down Gen Z, Gen Alpha things. That's like across the board.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're in a very I hate the time we're in right now.
It's weird trying to connect with most
everything
men.
I wanted as a kid.
Without the flying cars and the robot parts. It's disappointing.
Exactly, dystopic.
It's
Blade Runner without anything cool about Blade Runner.
Right.
We're just all fucking Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, you ready to talk about some aliens then?
Hell yes.
Fuck yeah.
Okay. We're going to talk about two things. One's really quick. Today, because everybody talks about how it's always in America, right? Well, today, UFO files were declassified in Argentina. The records were unsealed this year by Argentina's Ministry of Foreign Affairs that have confirmed an eyewitness account from 1991 when military personnel and civilian researchers in Antarctica detected and then saw a huge flying saucer over their base. and they've released it all. They released all the files for it. I'll give you the link to the story. It's
is there footage?
1991, so no footage, but they do have the papers. So, like, if you go down, basically, I'll go over the story real quick. At the start of the night, sun goes down. Their alarms end up going off on the station's rheometer, a machine that measures changes in the upper atmosphere. Despite the three needle pens measuring different heights of the ionosphere, the part of the atmosphere where solar radiation ionizes atoms, all of the needles began drawing the same pattern, which is scientifically impossible. According to Amaya, outpost personnel claimed that the strange readings could only have been caused by something producing the same energy as a nuclear aircraft carrier or a large city floating over Antarctica. Hours later, another base member was walking outside during a snowstorm when they allegedly saw a huge circle of light moving slowly and silently right over the building. The 1991 incident has finally come to light after Amaya claimed he and the other members of General San Martin Base were told never to talk about what they had seen by their superiors. Over 120 feet of paper was reportedly used during the 4.5 hour incident at General San Martin Base, with Amaya revealing that the needles were moving so violently that they went off the paper multiple times.
This is practically the thing.
Yeah, I guess. I haven't seen the movie, but I believe you. This equipment started registering normally, but after 5 minutes, the three indicator needles began to make the same marks, which the engineer explained was impossible. At these signals, at times, these signals would cut out and everything would continue as normal. Then for periods of 10 or 15 minutes, it would start again, sometimes with such force the needles would jump off the belt. Huh. The incredible reading started at around 1 a.m. local time and carried on through the night. Roughly 16 hours later at 10 p.m., Amaya said a radio operator from the Argentine army saw the mysterious craft as he left the base on a walk. Quote, he noticed a huge circle of light, very dim due to the cloud cover, passing above the base, but still visible and moving very slowly and silently towards the sea. The meteorological observer noted that by the time the man who saw the UFO could call for the rest of the base to come out and view it, the craft had disappeared. The three needles on the rheometer's graphic recorder were supposed to show independent readings because they measured different aspects of radio wave absorption in the ionosphere, which sits 30 to 600 miles above the surface. Normally, natural events like solar flares or auroras cause different patterns on each needle, since absorption varies by frequency, with lower frequencies getting absorbed more.
So this had to be like an overwhelming...
That's what they say. It had to have been a city or an aircraft carrier that was over, because the needles are literally pointing at different spots. And this goes on. If you see the link I sent you, if you scroll down, some of the paper is there. You can see some of it from the 1991
incident. The reading paper, it's like kind of jagged, and it has like, I can even see like where it goes almost like to the edge of where there could be writing. Like it's kind of, it looks off the charts to me.
So they also go down to show there's 9 rolls of records from this incident that still exist that have been stored in the Antarctic Institute. So all this stuff is just being declassified now. And I had never heard of this encounter before.
An Arctic base used by Argentina. How interesting.
Argentina and scientists, and they all saw it for 4.5 hours. And then 16 hours later, another base saw it.
That's fucking interesting.
So it's there. Just something to keep in mind. Like, again, it's not just the...
That's pretty good one. Yeah.
It's a good one. But the thing I want to talk about today is the thing, Alex, you know about, which is the MJ-12 documents.
Oh, yes.
Jesse, have you seen this?
No.
So you know the Majestic 12 documents we've talked about.
Yes. Yeah.
So somebody, in a way that I can only describe as how I would do it, has potentially proven that they are real due to the most boring reasons of all: FOIA document requests and matching up record numbers that are stamped on them. We're going to go over this. It's not a long read at all. He has pictures and everything.
It's interesting. It's like some Da Vinci Code shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to link that. It's just fascinating. Yeah, this person goes by MJ12 Logic is his name, and I'll read it completely. I recently spent some time reviewing the Majestic documents to see whether they shared any consistent identifying markers that could be used for corroboration. If folks have seen this validation elsewhere, please let me know. This post will be less writing and more concerned with simply sharing some relevant evidence I recently discovered validating the veracity of certain Majestic documents. 834021. Eventually, I realized that a few of the Majestic docs have a stamp in the lower right-hand corner with the identifying number 834021-, followed by the corresponding page number. Curious to see if this existed within any contemporaneous declassified evidence, I checked the CIA FOIA portal. Much to my pleasant surprise, I discovered this was not some random irrelevant document. Far from it. As it would turn out, I had discovered 345 pages of Operation Paperclip intelligence documents that were declassified on June 22nd, 2022, literally four years ago. And then I realized something even cooler. It turned out that all of these docs also had 834021, the identifying stamp in the lower right-hand corner of each page. For example, here's a screenshot showing four of the 345 pages, each which had the 834021 circled in red for reference. I linked the whole thing so you can
go down.
Now, here are the relevant Majestic documents I mentioned earlier. First, not surprisingly, is a CIA JIOA paperclip document that also bears this routing number in addition to the MJ-12 name on the distribution list. Also, for example, the table of contents for this MJ-12 annual report. Note that the 834021 in the lower right-hand corner and ER-1-2735 in the upper right-hand corner as also seen on page 3 of this recently declassified paperclip file. Relatedly, I ran a check against the routing number A-1762.1 in the CIA FOIA portal. Unsurprisingly, it yielded only a single result. More surprising to me, however, was that this yielded one hit on page 3 of 5 of this PDF declassified on June 13th, 2003, one positive match with the A-1762.1 identifier. Even more interesting was that this doc actually has one additional identifier, ER-1-2735 in the upper right-hand corner, which is seen in the MJ annual report immediately following this image in the immediately preceding MJ table of contents. He then goes on to star it. I'll try to have this linked in the after show. In Patreon.
There's a lot of screenshots. I see the stars. Yeah, this is like very easy to follow along with.
Yep. Within the first MJ-12 annual report screenshot below, see the matching executive registry number ER-1-2735 in the upper right-hand corner, in addition to the matching A-1762.1 in the middle of the page. And then last but not least, we have CIA SI-28-55 described as top secret Central Intelligence Agency Information Report, CIA SI-28-55, entitled A Digest of Worldwide Unidentified Flying Object Intelligence Material as Contained in the Armed Forces Security Agency Signals, Radar, Communications, and Human Intelligence Operations in the First 5 Years. The relevant file from the CIA FOIA portal is a 3-page PDF, with a third page being a letter from Sam Goudsmit to a redacted individual regarding the Robertson panel's conclusions. The letter on page 3 is not relevant. What is relevant is the annotated note on page 2, which I have circled in red and included here for reference. This all but confirms that CIA SI-28-55 indeed was the file number for internal CIA UFO reports, along with the veracity of the information in the first MJ-12 annual report cover page shown here.
Pretty fucking spiffy. These findings
provide additional evidence of MJ-12's existence during the late 40s and early 50s. It's virtually impossible to logically reconcile the supporting evidence with the idea that there was some paperwork regarding MJ-12 invented during the 1980s. Perhaps this represents the type of disclosure we should expect in 2026, not from the government, but from dedicated civilian research and FOIA documents.
That's real. That's actually impressive,
right? That's fucking crazy.
It's crazy. It gives me an idea, too. Like, there should be, like, a master timeline or something like that. That's, like, where you can put, like, Bill Tompkins' book and, you know, like, maybe it's like a Patreon or something in the timeline. And then, like, every month they add a book to the timeline. And then you see what like, moments and things corroborate with each other and see if we can pull some sort of true mythology out of all the bullshit.
It makes me also wonder if the theory that some of the MJ talk documents are real and mixed with purposeful disinformation documents when it went out to the public,
which is something that they've said happens all the time, right?
To this day, like you go through the Epstein files, fuck, you can see it all over the place that they manipulate 4chan, Reddit, all this stuff with like misinformation about shit. But this is the kind of shit that you need to be, people need to be following more, not what people are saying in their interviews, but like follow the documents, follow the money, because there's so many documents out there now that this kind of shit can be found, and it is not going to be found unless somebody's like specifically looking at these weird little things.
Things that couldn't be coordinated for fakey. Things that could only be explained by realness.
It makes me wonder, and like, I walked away, we did the MJ12 documents years ago now.
That was a while ago, yeah. And
I walked away going, probably fake. I don't know anymore, man. I don't know.
I do think that some of that shit is fake, though. Like, that's the thing.
Yes, I do,
like,
too. I think it's a mix.
Yeah. I kind of feel that. I kind of feel like it's...
This whole time, Jesse's just shaking his head back and forth.
It's like... usually, when we look at stuff on this, when it comes to aliens and UFOs and government documents, it's like a hodgepodge of stuff. And this is... like, work was put into getting this.
Justified research. It's like, yes, actually good, like, research.
This is fascinating.
Yeah, it's worth looking through. Like I said, it's research. The guy went through a lot of documents to get this all put together. And it's fascinating. Same. And couple that with the Argentina files being released, which are really fucking cool. Like, it's a good day to be a UFO nerd. Today.
I'm just captivated by the notion of an Argentinian UFO encounter at an Arctic base. That's fucking tight. That's like from a book already.
4.5 hours that it lingered there. That's crazy.
I must stress, it's really funny that when you think Arctic base, in my mind, I'm thinking like Bond level shit. It's like four red buildings.
It looks beautiful. It looks like a great place to have some fish stew, but that's about it. Yeah,
there's nothing else going on there.
But that's it for our today, boys. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to here on the Minisode and at Patreon and supporting us. We'll be back next week with a brand new Minisode for you. We appreciate you. We love you.
Bonk 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 bonk
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 bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk
bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk
bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk
bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk bonk